which is good. There's been a lot of cool progress on game in the last couple of weeks. I started sending out demos of it to a good chunk of your Discord server.
Oh, really? I hope that's cool. Because I haven't heard the updates since last time on where you gotten with the game. I know you had like the prototype that you were testing, and there was some actual game that exists now.
Yeah, I've sent out the playable paper version to a whole bunch of people, like real life friends through Facebook, and then a bunch of people who I don't know via your Discord, whom I suppose I've been getting to know, which has been quite nice, because explaining how it works and how to play it is met with a great deal of enthusiasm by most people. However, convincing people to actually get started is another story, especially for this prototype, because it's still played on paper. Like, you need a printer. Not everyone has a printer anymore.
Not even.
If I need to print, I go to the library. So it's
I used to do that too. I finally got a printer because I don't remember why. I absolutely needed to print something off, and I said, that's it. I'm getting a printer. I'm done with this.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, it's so rare that I need to print something maybe like once every like 4 to 6 months. And it's easier to go to the library to print off one page. Way cheaper. It's like, oh, I got to pay 20 cents. But it's like, that is much cheaper than ink, which is theft.
Yes.
Ink is worse than Adobe.
You sent out the prototype and...
Oh, yeah, yeah. So some people have been getting started. I've been getting good feedback on that. What I got a huge amount of feedback on was simply the inquiries on what the heck it was and how to use it. So nearly everybody unanimously had very similar questions on how to play it. So that was...
You didn't have a rule set or anything?
There was a rule set written down, but that demonstrated to me that wasn't clear enough.
Okay. Yeah, if you want me to go over clarity of anything descriptive like that, I'm pretty good with
that kind of stuff. Well, I'll send you the demo as well. You can tell me if the instructions make sense. Because I've rewritten them now and resent it, and that was a lot more easily understood by everyone, which is great. And a few people have gotten started. I'm playing on the same map as well. So we're sort of like, you know... just sort of bouncing off each other's progress and what sort of things people are doing to be able to get more or less points, what strategies they have, and that's been quite fun. As far as actual asset content for the digital version, for the longest time, it's just been chipping away on tiles. And last time we talked about it, I demonstrated sort of the machine I built that builds levels. Doesn't build them in their entirety, but allows me to distribute assets into the shape of what a level will be, so I can get very clear idea on how it will look, which is wonderful, because rather than building an aesthetic, trying to imagine what parts of that aesthetic will need to exist in order to illustrate it well in the form of a level, now I can build level shapes first, and then decide what aesthetic will fit that after the fact. Or rather, I can sort of choose an aesthetic and then sort of style shapes of mazes that fit with that, and then think, okay, with this aesthetic in mind, with this map shape in mind, what graphics will it need? And that's great. A lot of the time, it means I need to make more graphics than I would have thought initially. So there is actually going to be more work, but at least it's a directed work. I know exactly what I need and that it will all be used. Before it felt very risky before, because like, one, I wasn't sure if it was going to be used. And second, I wasn't sure if, even if I was going to use it, once it's assembled, will it work? You know, the colors might be way off. Maybe it doesn't tile correctly. Maybe it's just unappealing to look at when they're all stacked together and viewed from a distance. So now I can sort of do that on the fly. The second machine, this is all like node-based in Toon Boom, by the way. The second one is sort of the opposite of the level distributor, which is a tile McSlicer. So because it's tile-based levels, whereas a whole bunch of bricks all stacked together, some things are bigger than that. Whether it's a piece of scenery, an interactive piece of scenery, a very large door, or a very large monster. So I was wondering, how the heck is this going to be exported in such a way that it will fit seamlessly with everything else? So my theory at the moment is to rip a part out of the original tile distributor. So it takes a whole bunch of squares, throws them out into the shape of a thing, so, you know, like 4x3, 5x5, that kind of thing, for like a large drawing or a large animation. Each one of those squares is a mask. It sort of takes a portion of that drawing and masks itself into it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So now that each square has a little bit of monster existing inside of it, it then reverses the movement. All the squares move back again and are stacked on top of each other, only now they take their piece of creature with them. And they all distribute themselves back into the view of the camera. So it's just all of these tiles of someone split apart and stacked into a single point. Then...
Okay, that sounds like typical game... I mean, like game assets where you have items stacked or like sheets of sprites and then...
It is like sprite sheets, but it's like...
dimensions, yeah.
It's the nature of breaking it up into tiles that need to be reassembled later. Just to have a unified, system where I can be sure that there's nothing weird going on. There's not weird types of tiles. Everything in the game can simply work as one by one building blocks. And if I want to make something bigger than that, I can do a big character and then plug it into this thing, and it will automatically just go shing shing, and export it all out as little tiles that I can Lego back together inside the game engine. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I'm curious how that will play out because...
Well, it should play the
game
same.
Engine has to know... Yeah, it should know which... It has to know which tile to show. And because the monsters are animated, it has to know...
Like, oh, it's just a naming convention, you know? It'll be like monster A1 underscore 0001. So, you know, position top
and then
left,
all the zero
frame
ones.
One.
Yeah, and then all the 0-1s are showing, or all the 0-2s, so that's how you get your animation,
so,
I guess.
Yeah, so that tile plus. Always appears in the same place and then plays in order per situation.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay.
It also means that I can design these creatures and monsters directly into their native environment as well, rather than just being in a blank void and hoping that
and then having to think, like, how do I get it to fit inside the tile system? I don't know. It's sort of a weird combination of having to think about animation and programming. Which, I mean, any game animator has to think about that if they're not, you know, have a very small specific role on a large team. And, like, you're the person who just takes the assets and programs them into the game or
which
whatever.
Is tricky,
or you're the person who designs the characters.
Because I'm not a programmer myself. So I'm sort of still having to think like one.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a different challenge that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, it's just trying to add extra steps to make the coder's life easier. You know, we've got a set number of features and mechanics that exist, and it is exceptionally easy for an artist or a writer to just dream up new ideas and have no comprehension of how much work that really is. Like, one of the most common...
I was going to say, it's almost like the difference between writing and animating, the animating and programming, because the animators can animate and draw whatever they want, but the programmers have to get it to work in the game. So, you know, like, if you're an uneducated animator, you end up creating a bunch of work for your programmer if you don't know how things exchange with each other. Just like a writer might say, oh, well, you know, and then there's a fight scene and the 20 bad guys come rushing onto screen and, you know, the 5 bad guys teams, they're all together, they're all fighting. Then the animator's like, no, heck no, you gotta cut this down.
Very
to be
easy
more...
to write that. It's like if the writer was saying, like, I've just written the best fight scene ever, and you read the script and it's like, the best fight scene ever takes place. And you're like, huh.
There's just nothing. No information.
Yeah, so, well, I guess I animate the best fight scene ever now. Yeah, very similarly. Like, one of the most common requests or ideas that people would have that would look at this would be like, oh, have you thought about having a character editor so you can sort of customize the way your character looks? And when you stop and think about what would be involved with that, it would very comfortably add about 3 months of work.
So what would be the steps? That, you have a specific time frame in mind. What would have to happen to be able to edit the character?
Okay. Well, you would need to make all of the customizable pieces, like, you know, things like different hair, different clothes, different body shapes, different colors, different faces. However many of those different parts, all of those parts need to be compatible with each other, and all of them will need to be animated to every scenario that happens throughout the entire game.
Oh, so, you know, yes, very quickly right, adds up.
And then the programmer is also going to have to build an engine that allows you to activate and select all of these things, and then have your completed creation exist throughout the entire game and play as normal as well.
Yeah, I just...
Versus just having it in. I actually ran into an example like this just the other day where for like a wall, or let's say a floor tile, it's probably easier to understand. So floor tile is very generic and easy at first. You know, you only have to do one. Just, you know, generic texture of soil, repeat it infinitely, whatever. But when it's in a corridor, there really needs to be a way to differentiate it from... the walls either side, you know, whether it's a different color, or the easiest way is a drop shadow. So there's, you know, a bit of hard black against the side of a floor tile, and then it fades into normalcy on either side. That makes sense. That's fairly easy to do. But you need every combination of wall type to exist. You know, wall on all four sides, wall on each one side, and every combination in between. It's about 16. To have every, you know, three walls, every two wall, opposite walls. Yeah?
Yeah.
But then when I started laying the levels out, and I realized the, what about the diagonals? Basically, the sum of the floor tiles, if there is a side and a side, and then one across from that, a little bit of shadow will bleed in just on the tip of the corner. I hope that makes sense.
Sure.
Just take my word for it that happens. So then I thought, okay, well, I guess in order for shadowy floors to really work, there needs to be every combination of shadowy corners as well. That turned out to be about another 16. And then I thought, well, hang on. What there really needs to be is every combination of shadowy corner with every combination of shadowy side. And now you're... I wasn't able to even finish calculating it, but I'm pretty sure the amount of combinations goes over 100.
So, in other words, that now the problem is you can't solve it with just making more and more tiles. You have to actually think of a way to get it to look right on the sides that make sense with the for the programmer, too, because he's not going to program in like 500 different tile combinations.
Well, the decision to be made there was simply to not worry about cornery shadows. It means there'll be instances where it seems like the shadows have a bit of a hard edge, and I'll just live with that.
Yeah, they just are going to be darker because
the amount of production time it's going to save overall is overwhelming. Like one of the most common examples of this sort of thing is walls that have specific sides. So, you know, like maybe it's like a dirt wall that has bricks along the edge of where there will be floor.
Okay.
So again, 16 tile types for the combinations of where bricks would be. But if they're aligned in a particular way, then it looks like some of the corner ones, there should be bricks to sort of complete it, but there isn't. There's just going to be this little corner patch of soil. And it looks kind of lame, but I think I'm just going to have to cut my losses and live with that. Otherwise, it'll be like 130 different tile types that would need to exist in the game, which would be... difficult to create for every type of wall, difficult to implement for having to select very, like going through the drop-down list just to find that particular tile, just to put it in that very specific spot. I don't even know if they'll even all be used. And the whole point of this system was, like, if it's just like a brick wall, that doesn't matter. That doesn't have edges. It has one type, and you just paint with it. Heck, you could like paint bucket it into wherever there are gaps. Okay, there's no detail here. Paint bucket it with bricks. Easy. And just because I wanted to have a little bit of detail of having it on the edge, over 100 types is ridiculous. So, yeah. I'm trying to be sensible. 16. That's enough.
Okay, yeah. Now I'm curious of when I get to see it, if I'll notice those things.
Well, I think what I'll do is just use footage of creating some of these things as the backing for this episode.
And that'll help, so yeah.
Hopefully viewers will be able to follow along with what I've been saying a little bit more clearly. But that's just a very relevant example from what I've been doing this week. And on a grander scale, what I'm trying to do is just to make sure that I don't do that to my coda at every turn, which is very easy to do. Because, like I said, I don't really know how to code, but I know enough about how it works to be able to, like, have a conversation with the one. And what tends to make things stupid and what doesn't. But I still tread lightly. Yeah. And whenever I sort of have an idea or request something, I'm very careful to be like, is this ridiculous? And there's been a few times where I've been surprised thinking that something was massive. And then they're just like, no, there's actually an open source API for that. Let's just plug it in. And I'm just like, oh, cool.
Do you have an example of that? Like, what would just be solved with, oh, you just plug this in and then you can do that thing that you thought would be really hard to do. Something that
someone else has done and they've made it open source.
Yeah.
Not off the top of my head, not for this project. More common example would, I think, be if you're doing any sort of application that involves time zones. There's really fascinating videos on YouTube about how awful it is to apparently deal with time zones in programming.
Wow, they're already terrible. I can't imagine it being any more.
It gets absurd. But fortunately, people who have done all of that mind-numbing work before have apparently like packaged it up and given it out just to make everyone else's lives easier. Which is very, very, very kind. Anyway, did I just ramble about tiles for 20 minutes?
Yeah, I think we talked a lot about gaming and like programming and animation together. I don't think, like, I haven't worked on any games besides ones that, the only game I've worked on was just a little pet creation game. So all I had to do was make some art assets that I knew would stack together and be animatable. And then the program itself had an animation machine inside it. So you just drop your pieces in. And you can just tell them to, like, oh, you know, rotate or wiggle or do whatever. So you can create animations out of that. But I haven't had to deal with any programming, like the programming side of animation.
Proper experience with it as well. And the whole time I've just been very paranoid and focused on the plausibility of it. The fact that it can still be actually possible with two people within a reasonable amount of time. Because it's not too uncommon to... Because, like, everyone has ideas. Ideas are the easy part. And it's not too uncommon to have a conversation with someone being like, I have an idea for a game that I want to make one day. And you're like, oh, let's hear it. And they're like, oh, it's like World of Warcraft and Skyrim and stuff. And you're like... What? Like,
that's doable by one person.
Right? I mean, it's not like $100 million project.
Yeah, not in a conventional sense. Walk into a
studio and be like, I have an idea for a game. And they're like, sure, here's $100 million. Go make it. It doesn't work that way. I've had ideas for large scale projects like that as well. And, you know, I have to cut my losses and be like, that will probably never, ever, ever happen. The reason why I'm doing this one is because it was something I stumbled across, sort of crafted it over like 10 years. But it was this can actually happen. It is within the scope of reality, which is great.
Yeah.
And even then, the first couple of months where I felt like I was sort of running into the wall a bit and not really knowing, will I ever be able to finish this? Will it work the way that I'm envisioning it? And now it's at the point where I still don't know if we'll how close to being able to finishing it we could get, but at least now there is momentum. I'm able to build parts with confidence and know how it will all fit together.
Yeah, you actually have content. That's like when I talk about, like I've talked about in a previous episode, it would have been a while ago now, about developing a series as a single person with, you know, or like a small team, a very small team, like me and a couple of friends who can do backgrounds or whatever, how much of a series you can actually produce and how to do that in a way that you are able to keep making episodes and you don't make just one episode get completely burned out on all your resources and be like, well, that's it. You know, thanks for watching episode one of people in the world or whatever.
Oh, that's a very interesting question. And I think we should talk about that next time. So tune in then. And in the meantime, I don't tend to do this a whole lot because I don't want to be intrusive, but it's relevant to what we're talking about now. Because I'm like plugging my own channel, which seems weird. But all the progress on this game, which we've been talking about, I go into a lot more detail on it on a step-by-step basis. I try to do it fairly regularly, talking about the experiments and the downfalls and the successes on making this game and how I'm doing it over on my channel. So if you want to go head over to Onion Skin and look for the Willpower Recap series. That's what that's called. Hopefully you'll get something out of it. Maybe learn something or maybe just find it interesting. I don't know. Yeah. Next time, working with small teams. Actually, quick blast from the future. I'm editing this now weeks later and realizing things have changed. Turns out ignoring corners of shadows was not a thing that could happen, and did have to build new machines that did all the combinations of stuff. If you're interested in seeing how that journey drew to a close, I've got a special episode of Willpower Recap down in the description there. Give that a little clicky.